Can I share, it's called, So What Should I Eat During Shemitah? And tonight we're going to try, I have a few more theoretical things that you need to understand, but we're going to try to get down to the bottom line of, if you're here in Eretz Yisrael, during the various tkufot when produce grown in Shemitah with Kedusha Shvit is hitting the market, so what are your various options and what should you do? The last class we had, we spoke about the Heter Mechira. We spoke about the great economic necessity which led the Poskim already 120 or so years ago to agree to a very dramatic act of selling the land to an Arab in order to avoid the laws of Shemitah. And we also spoke about the various halakhic objections that have been raised to the Heter Mechira. Just very, very briefly to remind you, there are a number of potential problems, any single one of which could invalidate the whole Heter Mechira. In other words, to accept the Heter Mechira's validity, you have to make a whole series of assumptions that without any one of them, potentially the whole thing could fall apart. First of all, you have to assume that, like the Sefer HaTruma says, we saw that in the Gemara there's a discussion whether Yesh Kinyan Anochri Lafkir Mitrumo Tumatra, whether when a goy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, it removes it from the laws of Shemitah. The Gemara said in the end that when Kedusha Ta'aretz is Midrabanan, that happens. But Kedusha Ta'aretz today we hold, and we'll talk about this more in the last year that we'll have Bezrat Hashem next week, we hold the Kedusha Ta'aretz today is Midrabanan. But the laws of Shemitah are Midrabanan. So based on the Sefer HaTruma, which is one of the Rishonim, who says that that even when the laws of Shemitah are midrabanan, that you can also that the goy also has the ability to remove the laws of Shemitah. So that's one assumption that you're relying on. We also are assuming that fruit owned by a goy doesn't have to be shachvit, or fruit grown on land owned by a goy doesn't have to be shachvit, which in general we do assume. But for example, the Chazon Ish was machmir on that. There's also the problem of lo techaneim we spoke about, that a Jew is not allowed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to a goy. And here we spoke about a number of reasons why potentially this issur doesn't apply in the case of the Heter Mechira, whether it's because the land is being sold only temporarily, or whether it's because it's being sold to a goy who doesn't worship a Avodah Zarah, or whether it's because it's being sold to a goy who already owns land in Eretz Yisrael, so you're only adding to his holdings, you're not giving him the ability to settle here, he already lives here. And perhaps most significantly, because the whole purpose of this is actually to strengthen the Jew's ability to, in the long run, hold on to the land by allowing him to be we have a Jewish farmer who, if he collapses economically, he's going to have to sell off his land. And if he's able to make it because of the Heter Mechira, then in the end he'll get it. So, since the ultimate purpose is actually to strengthen the Jewish people holding on to the land, so there are those who allowed it. But there are definitely people who object to it on the basis of lo techaneim, as we spoke about. The question, and we mentioned this last time also, if lo techaneim presumably is an isser that might be violated by the farmer if he sells his land to the guy. But that question needs to be answered at the time by the farmer and by the rabbi that's allowing it at the time of the sale. Once it was done, so presumably, as far as you or I are concerned as consumers, so even if the farmer did an avera by selling the land to the guy, that shouldn't have any effect on whether or not the heter worked. And as it could be that he wasn't allowed to do it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work once it was done. We did mention, though, that the Chazon Ish raised the following issue, that there's a rule of Ein Shaliach B'dvar Avera. If you appoint someone to do an Avera on your behalf, that person is not a Shaliach. And since the sale is generally carried out not by the landowner himself, but by the rabbi acting as an agent, so maybe if you hold that it's Aser, then the sale didn't even work. Right? That issue was raised by the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish also raised a few other serious objections. He raised a serious objection that it's very highly questionable whether the farmer or the owner of the land, I should say, and perhaps even the Arab who buys it really, really mean this. Is this a serious sale where there's what's called the Nirat Dat, where you know, we talked about if a guy would come in and start, you know, digging up the land or stuff like that, whether the owner would really allow it, whether he really believes that he's selling his land, or whether he thinks it's just, you know, sign on the dotted line, and, you know, and then you'll get your two-dot kashrut. Particularly also, the Chazon Ish pointed out, because it's not registered by the government in the land registry, which normally real estate transactions are, so that also lends to the idea that this is a joke that doesn't have real legal validity. And again, if the sale doesn't really work, if it wasn't really a genuine sale, so then obviously the whole thing falls apart. Then you didn't do anything, and then you're back to just having Jewish-owned land. Even if all that works in theory, there's another problem, which is that the condition of the Heter Mechira, as stipulated by Rav Kook, and by all the other Rabbanim that allowed it, is that any Melachot De'oraita still has to be done by a Goy. In other words, for example, planting can't be done by a Jew. Has to be done by a Goy. In practical terms, there's no real pikuach. There's no real way to supervise this. And many of the farmers who aren't religious, you know, they're very happy to sign the document to get the heter and the tzedakah kashrut, but they don't necessarily abide afterwards by the conditions. And therefore, there's a concern that the things might have actually been planted by a Jew, in which case, now what happens if a Jew did plant this seed, sir? So now you have a Jew who planted seeds in a field owned by a goy. That wasn't allowed. But let's say he did it. Is the food that then grows afterwards, is that usher? Is that svichin? That's a machloket. That's a machloket. Whether, if a Jew plants the iser in a field owned by a guy, whether the fruit that then grows is usher midin svichin. If you hold it's not, so then still, even if the Jew violated the law, then by buying it, you're not necessarily any worse off. But on the other hand, if you hold the other way, then there might be an iser there. And finally, even if all those things work out, there's also the point that the Rabbanim who allowed the Heter, every single one of them from the beginning straight down to today, made it very clear over and over and over again that this is really, really good b'dieved. We're only doing this because of the Shatat Chak. Every single Shemitah needs to be reevaluated, whether we should really be doing this or not. And therefore, one has to ask also whether the conditions today are the same as they were 120 years ago, or 100 years ago, or 80 years ago, or 50 years ago, and whether the conditions today continue to justify the use of the Heter Mechira. Now, a major controversy exists on this topic, and unfortunately perhaps, although this really is a genuine halachic argument, there is a... it has traditionally kind of broken down on ideological lines. There's no halachic reason why it should. But the Tzibur HaCharedi, I guess following the Pesach of the Chazon Ish, has not accepted the Heter Mechira. And not only that, but has refused traditionally to buy products that were grown with the Heter Mechira, even in cases where perhaps it might be permissible to do so. And again, you know, maybe I should talk about that first. Let's say I disagree with the existence of the Heter. For any one of the reasons I just mentioned, I think the Heter Mechira doesn't work. So can I, as a consumer, what happens now if I want to buy the produce? Okay, the farmer relied on the Heter Mechira, and as far as I'm concerned, this didn't work. So now he presumably assumed that the field is now allowed to be worked properly, and he went ahead and did whatever he was going to do with it. And now, the question is, can I go ahead and buy the fruit? If you're dealing with fruits as opposed to vegetables, so there's a good reason, there's a very good argument to say that afilu if the heter is completely invalid, so sachakol you have perot shvit. You have perot shvit that might be what we call shamur v'nevad. Not all of you were in that shir. I'll just point out that if somebody broke the laws of Shemitah in an orchard or a vineyard, so that means that instead of making it hefker like he's supposed to, he locked it up, shamur, that's not allowed. And perhaps mevat, perhaps he pruned the trees, perhaps he watered it improperly, fertilized, did various other activities that are prohibited in Shemitah. So it's shamur and or ne'evad. So the question is, does that make the fruits asur or not? And we explained that the general practice and we have the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach behind us on this as well, is that to be mekil with Shamur v'ne'evad. So therefore, even if I think that the farmer completely violated laws of Shemitah, it still could be possible for me to buy fruit that was grown during Hetzer Mechira, and then to treat that fruit with Kedushat Shvi'it, even though Lafi, those who allowed it, it doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it. I would assume it does have Kedushat Shvi'it. I would treat it with Kedushat Shvi'it, and I should be able to buy those fruits. There is the potential problem of Lifnei'iver Lotitei Nishol and Mechazek Yedeya over Avera, that if somebody completely broke Shemitah, you're not supposed to assist him by buying his products, but that's not really the case here. Tzachar called this person relied on a legitimate hetzer, that even if you hold doesn't exist, that he's relying on great Gedol Yisrael, and we can never forget that in discussing the Hetzer Mechira, that Gedol Yisrael of the highest caliber, and not only Zionist ones, I'm not only talking about Rav Kook, who was a Gedol Yisrael of the highest caliber, but I'm also talking about Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan Spector, and Rav Tzvi Pastor Frank, and a number of other of the Mamash, the top Gedolim of various generations, who agreed that the Hetzer Mechira should be done. So there's no problem of being the chazek yad over aveir. The person's not over aveir. The person's following a psak of Gedol Yisrael. The psak that I follow may be different. On this basis, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, b'di'evit it's permissible to buy these fruits. Rav Moshe Feinstein says this, and even the Chazon Ish at one point said that, but then retracted based on a few of the points that I made earlier. So at least when it comes to fruits, there's definitely what to rely on. When it comes to vegetables, there's a bigger problem, because if the vegetables were planted in a field during Shemitah year, on the assumption that the Hetzer Mechira works, and I hold that the Mechira doesn't work, that means according to me, these are Tzvichim, and then in fact it would be prohibited to eat the vegetables. So someone who doesn't accept the validity of the Hetzer Mechira would have a harder time buying vegetables that were grown with Hetzer Mechira than fruits. However, before I go on to other options, I just want to point out something, which is that this is a historical debate that's gone on for... Well, actually, before I get to that. So, as I started to say a minute ago, what has happened, unfortunately, is that, like I said, the Tzibur HaCharedi has typically rejected the Hetzer Mechira, and has not even bought things that perhaps could have been done through the Hetzer Mechira, such as maybe the fruits. And not only that, you want me to just close the door? It's a little noisy out there. And not only that, but the Tzibur HaCharedi typically has also, in many cases, avoided other heterim that we're going to discuss in a minute, some of which were endorsed by the Chazon Ish himself, some of which were invented by the Chazon Ish, like Otzer Beit Din. Exactly, invented. He was one of the major pioneers, not just performance, but pioneers of implementing it the way it's done today. In many cases, although there is Otzer Beit Din that sold with Badat Hashkacha, but in many cases, the Tzibur HaCharedi has gone for Arab produce or imported produce. And the religious Zionist community has, which identified, I guess, with the values of settling the land and supporting the farmers, has traditionally supported the Hetzer Mechira, and in some cases has also become very ideological about it, and, you know, making it seem as though the Hetzer Mechira is like the best thing in the world, which it's all of its inventors and proponents felt the exact opposite of that. And of course, this gets very polemical. You know, so one person who doesn't rely on the Hetzer Mechira, and let's say I do rely on the Hetzer Mechira, and you don't. So a lot of times, you look at me as somebody who's not from, who's eating treif or something like that. And I, in turn, will accuse you of not caring about Eretz Yisrael, not caring about Medinat Yisrael, not caring about, you know, all these other sorts of things. When you know, it may very well be that you just really, really troubled by, or the psak you got, by a post, is very troubled by these things. So what I want to try to do tonight is to, first of all, discuss a few other options, because there are today other viable options besides, which don't always work, but in many cases, there are options that are neither Hetzer Mechira nor buying from Goyim. There are other ways to buy from Jews, in not all cases, but in many cases. And then to try to grapple with the dilemma of which things we should be machmir on, which things we should be making on, and how we make these decisions. But before I jump into that, just one point about the Hetei Mechira. In recent years, starting already some 20-something years ago, and particularly this coming Shemitah, even more so, there are reasons why the Hetei Mechira today may be actually better than it was several generations ago, and even to a certain extent than in the last Shemitah. Why so? At least on the Bidiyavid level, I told you the Chazon Ish had a number of primary objections. The main one, first of all, is the problem that even if the Hetei Mechira works, the work has to be done by Goyim, and the non-religious farmers are not necessarily going to listen to the orders of the rabbis. Now, unfortunately, the fact that the non-religious farmers are not necessarily going to listen to the orders of the rabbis, unfortunately, that is as true today as it ever was. But there's another development, which also may be unfortunate, but which is true. And that is that today, there's almost no actual physical farm labor that's still being done by Jews. Today, the Jewish farmers, in most cases, are the managers and the boss, so to speak. But the actual physical work is very often being done by, is almost always being done by foreign workers. Thailandi immigrant, not immigrants, but migrant workers who come here for a couple of years to work in agriculture. That's not necessarily a positive thing from the United States, but that is the reality. Certainly on the large farms. I don't know if this man we're going to meet tomorrow is running a few vineyards and orchards. He may do it himself, I don't know. But certainly on the large farms where the majority of the stuff is produced, that is definitely the case. And therefore, even though the guy is not necessarily going to listen to what the rabbi told him, but in the Mela, he ain't planting the seeds himself anyway in almost all the cases, and therefore it's virtual certainty that the actual physical work is done by a goy, so that problem is solved. Also, another objection that the Chazon Ish had was that if it's not registered in the land registry, it's not a legal sale. In response to this problem, already in 1979, at the request of the religious parties, the Knesset passed a law which says that if the Heter Mechira is done and is endorsed by the Rabbanut HaRashit, it has the legal status of exactly the same as if it's registered in the National Land Registry. So now there's a law in the Knesset that says that that's a legal sale. So presumably the argument that it's not a legal sale because it's not registered by the government presumably would be addressed by the fact that the Knesset passed a law to solve that problem. And also the Rabbanut, in this coming Shemitah, is changing the terms of the Hetei Mechira and is being much, much more exacting in their procedures. In the past, basically, there was a standard form that they would fax to the farmer. He would sign on the dotted line and fax it back. It wasn't, the concern that there's no Gmirat Daan and that sort of thing was, a very legitimate one. And then they would just sit down, say, okay, we represent, basically the whole country and, sell the whole country to a goy. What's being done now, there's a book that I'm going to be referring to a lot tonight. I may have pointed this book out in one previous year. Rav Zev Weitman, his name may be familiar to you as the head mashkiach in Tnuva. If you look on your yogurts, his name is on there. He happens to live down the block from me. And he's been very involved with Shemitah. Before he was the chief rabbi of Tnuva, he was at one point the rav of Kibbutz Kfar Etzion, which is right across the road from Olin Shvut. And their kibbutz was, with a lot of agriculture. And he was in the Shemitah of Tavshin Mem Zion, 1986-87. He was the rav of Kfar Etzion. He was very involved in trying to run their whole kibbutz agriculture without recourse to the Hetei Mechira. He subsequently wrote this book, which is a fascinating book, which I'll make reference to later. This book is basically a proposal for an attempt to virtually do away with the Hetei Mechira and run the entire Israeli economy in Shemitah almost completely without using the Hetei Mechira at all. This book makes some controversial suggestions in order to do that, which I'll talk about. But it's certainly a fascinating theory, whether it would be implemented or not. In the last Shemitah, Tnuva, which is mainly a dairy company, also used to have a fruit and vegetable department, right near MMY actually. There's a big shuk, wholesale fruit and vegetable market that used to be run by Tnuva. People still call it Tnuva, but I think it's no longer run by Tnuva. And in his capacity as a Rebbe of Tanuva, he actually was supervising a significant portion of the fruits and vegetables being sold in the country in the previous Shemitah 7 years ago. And he implemented on some level some of the things in this book. At this time, Tanuva no longer is involved with that. But in addition to being the Rebbe of Tanuva, he was appointed by the Rabbanut HaRashit as the head of the committee dealing with Shemitah. And as a result of that, he's instituted some changes. I assume some other people are involved in it also, but they're being much more serious about the Hetzer Mechira. First of all, every farmer is getting an individual contract, a real legal document that they get in the mail and they get nervous and call lawyers because it's like scary. It's like a real legal document that says you're selling your land. And they're all checking with lawyers to make sure that they're near their back afterwards, which means that there really is giving a that. It's a serious contract. It's being done individually. They're checking also a lot of the agricultural land in Israel is leased. A lot of times the guy who farms the land doesn't even own it. So he can't even really sell it to the guy necessarily. Or sometimes it's complicated because sometimes it's very long-term leases, 20-year leases. Plus a lot of the land is really owned by the government in Israel. It's very complicated. So in many cases they're making two or three different people sign for each piece of land, the owner and the renter and the subcontractor. I don't know exactly how it works. But they're checking each piece separately and they're setting up these individual contracts. And in order to avoid the problem of Ein Shaliach Udvar Aveira, the rabbis are not acting as agents. Instead, what's happening is that the land is being transferred to the Israel Lands Authority, which owns most of the land anyway. You know, they're basically returning the land to the government. And then a representative of the government is actually going to conduct the sale directly, without a Shaliach. I mean, the rabbis will be there with him to make sure it's done properly, but no Shaliach. So presumably the Ein Shaliach Udvar Aveira problem is solved. One could still argue, but I'm just pointing out that the Hetzer Mechira today, although his whole goal, as I told you, is to get rid of it, or at least to minimize it as much as possible, but when it is being done, it's at least being done in a more serious way. And therefore, at the very least, if it needs to be relied on, I think it can be given a little bit more credit than perhaps in the past. Okay. But let's talk about other possibilities. There are a number of other options for keeping the economy going during Shemitah. In other words, allowing the crops to be grown and the stuff to be sold to you so you can eat it and the farmer to make a living during Shemitah without relying on the Hetzer Mechira. In order to do so, you're going to have to rely on some other kulot. But it can be done in many cases. Now, obviously, when having this discussion, we have to differentiate between fruits and vegetables. Vegetables are much harder because they have to be planted, or else they won't grow. And that's going to be a much more significant problem. With fruit, to a certain extent, half or a third of the problem is taken care of. The trees are there, and they give fruit. They have to be worked with and worked on, and there's all kinds of questions, what kinds of things can be done, can't be done, what can be done before Shemitah, what has to be done during Shemitah, etc. There's all sorts of issues that a farmer has to deal with, but it should be possible to get the trees to produce fruit without violating Shemitah. Then the only problem is how to get the fruit to you so you have fruit to eat, and how to get the farmer paid so he doesn't go bankrupt. Okay? And mistaver that there is a way. And it's called Otsar Beit Din. The whole notion of Otsar Beit Din is based on a Tosefta. So Sefta tells us the following. Now you will remember, I hope, that in the Shemitah year, it's prohibited for the farmer to harvest the crops in the normal way. In fact, nobody's allowed to go in and harvest the crops in the normal way. You're not allowed to harvest what we call commercial quantities or industrial quantities. You're allowed to go and pick a few fruits for yourself, for your family, for a few days, whether you're the owner of the field or whether you're not. And the Gemara gives all kinds of examples that has to be processed. It can't be processed in the normal way. Ein dorchim anavim begat, for example. If you want to make wine, you don't take it to the normal wine press and, you know, where they produce large quantities. You have to do it in a smaller area where you're producing just a, you know, kind of homemade quantity type of thing. And, of course, once you do it, you're not allowed to do schora. You're not allowed to sell. You're allowed to sell, but you're not allowed to do business in Peiro Shvit. I want to go around. We talked about the Sokharei Shvit, right? People going around collecting stuff and selling them. That's not allowed. But there's this very strange Tosefta. The Tosefta tells us that The Beit Din, now, Beit Din we usually understand to be a court, but a Beit Din is not only a court of law. Beit Din is also kind of local government. A town can be run by a Beit Din. In the old days it was. So the Beit Din sometimes got involved a little bit in making sure that the Perot that are Hefker get to where they're supposed to get to and that people don't abuse the system. So it says, Barishona hayu shluchei Beit Din yoshvin al pitchei ayarot. Originally, the Beit Din would appoint people to sit at the entrances to the city. Kol mi shemevi Perot betoch yado, netlun otam imenu v'netten lo mehen mazon shalosh sudot, v'ashar machnisin otam lo tzar shevayir. People would bring their fruits, and the shluchei Beit Din would kind of, I guess, almost confiscate them, say how much you have, give you back enough to have three meals worth, because you're not supposed to be taking more than a certain amount, and the rest they would place in a big warehouse, otzar shevayir. And then he gives manateinim, when various fruits would ripen, so for example, when the teinim would ripen, shluchei Beit Din sochrim paolim, the Beit Din would go ahead and hire workers, and the workers would go out to the fields and harvest all of the teinim, and they would do it, and the words that are used here are the normal industrial processes that are not allowed during Shemitah. They would go and do that and pack them into the normal wheels, that's the way they used to make their, that's the way they used to pack teinim, and put them into the same warehouse. He gives man on a vin. When the grapes ripen, shluchei Beit Din sochrim paolim, botzrinotam, v'dorchinotam begat. They would pick all the grapes, press them in the regular wine, press them into wine. V'konsinotam b'chaviyot, v'machnisinotam l'otzar shevayir. He gives man zekin, shluchei Beit Din sochrim paolim, moskinotam, v'onsinotam beit abad, v'konsinotam b'chaviyot, v'machnisinotam l'otzar shevayir. So they would go ahead and hire workers and go out and harvest all the crops in the regular way and package them, make them, press them into wine, press the olives into oil and using the regular equipment and put them all into this huge warehouse. And then what happens to all the stuff that's in this warehouse? Then Erev Shabbat, you can come to the warehouse and they'll start handing stuff out to you. Now this Tosefta is mind-boggling because the Beit Din, it seems like it's appointing people to do things that are usher in Shemitah. How in the world is this supposed to work? How could this be? So there are some that were so shocked by this Tosefta that they actually reread the Tosefta, not the way it sounds like, and claim that the whole Tosefta is talking about what happened in the sixth year. That this would all be done in the sixth year in order to make sure that there'd be stuff left over for the seventh year. But that is not the standard shot in this Tosefta. And that's not the way it's generally understood. It sounds like this would be done in Shemitah. How is that possible? Why is it that it's prohibited to go and harvest the fields in the normal way? If I go and I take a team of workers and I go through my fields and I harvest all the crops, what am I basically showing? That I'm the owner of the field, and that's exactly what's not allowed in Shemitah. Tashrit, tishmetena, unitashta. Right? But here, it's not being done by an individual. Not by the owner of the field, and not by any other individual. It's being done by the Beit Din. And who is the Beit Din? The Beit Din is basically, correct, it's who do these fruits belong to? They belong to everybody. The Beit Din is acting as the representative of the Tzibur. And they're allowed to do what an individual is not allowed to do. That seems to be the pshat in this Tosefta. And so basically what this Tosefta does is that but they didn't decide, look, in theory, everybody could go out and pick small quantities of stuff, and they could go and, you know, press them into wine and oil. But you know what? We're gonna streamline this. We're going to help everybody out. First of all, why should everybody have to go schlep all over the place to the different fields? Second of all, individuals aren't allowed to use the professional equipment. And third of all, there's always the fear that people will take too much and people will sell it. We're going to regulate this. We're going to step in as the government, and we're going to regulate the matter. We're going to hire workers. We're going to, on behalf of the community, we're going to do what an individual is not allowed to do. We're going to go and harvest everything for the tzibur. We're going to put it into this big warehouse, the Otzar Beit Din, and then we're going to go and distribute it to the tzibur for free, because it's hefker. And we're going to make sure that everybody only gets a certain amount, because you're not allowed to take more than that amount. Okay, so that's the Tosefta. About the year 1910, the suggestion was raised to use this Tosefta as a precedent and to institute a modern version of this in order to solve some of the problems that we've been dealing with. It was done first by the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim in 1910, and they did it a little differently. But shortly after that, the Chazon Ish endorsed the idea and made certain changes. And basically what the Chazon Ish suggested is the following. We'll set up a Beit Din, which will decide to go ahead and do this. To go to the various orchards and vineyards that weren't sold by Hetzer Mechira. If they're sold by Hetzer Mechira, they belong to an Arab. We have no, and they're not Hefker, and we have nothing to do with them. But those farmers that are willing not to sell the field to an Arab. So they're going to make their field Hefker, right? So instead of just making the field Hefker and just letting anybody come into it, we, the Beit Din, are going to take responsibility for that field. Now, in the Tosefta, it says that all they would do is hire people to harvest the crops. But the way modern agriculture is done, you need to do stuff before that also. They need to be watered, and they need to be taken care of in ways that are allowed during Shemitah. We're going to take care of that even. We want to make sure, the farmer, after all, is Hefker, right? We want to make sure that these fruits exist so that the people can benefit from them. So we're going to hire people to take care of this vineyard or orchard. And when the time comes, we're going to hire people to harvest the crops and to bring them to the Otsar Beit Din. And then the Otsar Beit Din is going to then go ahead and distribute them. Who are we going to hire? The guy who owns it the other 6 years. After all, he's the most logical person. He knows this field the best. Not only that, but today, in order to do this, you know, in the time of the Mishnah, they sent people out and they started picking fruits. Today, to run this thing properly, we need a whole irrigation system, which there already is one here, and that guy owns it. And even though he has a chiyuv to make the fruits hefker, he doesn't have a chiyuv to use his irrigation system and his water to water it. Right? So we're going to have to rent that, and he doesn't have an obligation to let us use his tractors and all that stuff. So we're going to hire him, and we're also going to rent his equipment. We're going to pay him on behalf of the Beit Din. You're not, the other 6 years, you are the owner. Now you're not the owner. You are master of your field. But we are going to hire you as a shliach Beit Din to go ahead and take care of the field according to our instructions of what's allowed during Shemitah. And when the time comes to harvest the crops and to package them in normal packaging, because you're allowed to, because now you're doing it as a shliach Beit Din, and to ship them to our warehouse, and then we're going to distribute them by sending it out to various supermarkets and places where people can get them. We're not going to sell the fruits, because they pay what you need, and they have care, and they are, and there's an issue with chora, but we are going to charge a fee for the fact that we hired you. That's how we're going to pay you, actually. We're going to charge a fee for the people who get the fruits. They could have gone out to the field and schlepped up to the Golan and picked these apples themselves. Instead, we took upon ourselves as a Beit Din to make sure that the field was taken care of for 6 months or 8 months until the apples were gone, and that you drove around with your tractors and harvested them all and packed them in these things, and he could walk into his supermarket and give up Shalom Yerushalayim and get this apple that came from the Golan. The apple's free, but all the labor that went into it isn't free. So we're going to charge a fee to the people that get the apple on behalf of the Lord, and you're going to act as our shaliach. And basically what then happens is that the apples get to the market with Kedushat Shvit, and the farmer gets paid. Now, this may sound like a joke, like a legal fiction. If so, then we're back to where we started from on a certain level, but it still could be a better one than the Hetzer Mechira in terms of the problems that don't exist here that do exist with the Hetzer Mechira. But it also depends on how it's implemented. This sounds like a game, but if it's done properly, it's not a game. And there's one very, very significant difference between what? That's one thing. But besides that, the economics of it sounds like what we're basically doing is we're basically letting the same guy sell his same fruit, which is calling it something else, and making everything should be happy. But if this is really done properly, then he's an employee, not the owner. That means that that farmer should be paid a fixed sum of money, regardless of how much of the fruits are sold and for how much they're sold for, right? If he's not the owner anymore, right? And we're the bait thing, we're hiring you this year to do what you do all the other years for yourself. The rest of the year is you're an independent businessman, right? And you take all the risk, and you hope to make all the profit, right? If things go well, you make a lot of money. If things bomb, you lose, right? That's the way it is the rest of the year. This year, you're not the owner. We're hiring you on behalf of the tzibur. Well, if he's an employee, he should get a salary. And if the fruits wind up getting sold for more, he shouldn't get that profit. And if they wind up getting sold for less or not at all, or even if they don't even grow, he should get paid anyway. I mean, he pays his own workers, right? The rest of the year, those Thailandi guys get paid whether he grows fruits or don't grow fruits. So if he's really a shaliach, if he's really an employee, he should be paid a fixed salary. And in fact, that's what the Chazon Ish wanted. And some Otzah Beit Din did actually work this way. When Rav Weitman, in the previous Shemitah, when he ran the Otzah Beit Din through Tznuva, he actually ran it that way. He got Tznuva to agree. I read in an article that Tznuva lost 10 million shekels in the Shemitah of Tav Shin Samach Aleph. Whether they called it stucco, whether they called it a business write-off, I don't know. 10 million shekels for Tznuva, I guess, is you know, something that they can absorb. I mean, it's a loss, but... Yeah, but it is a right. You need. I mean, it's a huge company, Tznuva. I mean, it's the largest dairy, and at that point, it was also the largest fruit and vegetable and meat division. I mean, they're a massive company, right? Worth billions. So they have. So I don't know how he was able to convince them to do this, but they did it. In the current Shemitah, there doesn't seem to be such a situation, and most of the because they paid the farmers a fixed rate, and if they didn't sell the fruits for enough money, I don't know the details of it, but that is the point is the farmers were paid as a salary. The Beit Din, which was funded by Tznuva, said, "Okay, we're hiring you," and then Tznuva was supposed to distribute the fruits and collect the fee to pay those guys. But if it didn't work, if they didn't collect the money, they lost the money. In a regular year, they go to the farmer and say, "We didn't sell your stuff. You're not getting paid." But this year, he's an employee, right? The problem is, Otzah Beit Din, although that's the way the Chazon Ish said it's supposed to work, and apparently at least this one time it did work that way, in most cases, the various organizations that are running the Otzah Beit Din don't have the financial resources to do that. And therefore, they have to rely on even greater kula, in which they write the contract with the Shluchei Beit Din in such a way, the farmer who's the Shliach Beit Din, basically, they hire him as a subcontractor, as a kablan. A kablan doesn't have to get it necessarily a fixed salary. He's a subcontractor. He's an independent businessman who's being hired to do a job. He's not an employee. There's a difference. In business law, there's a difference. Kosher Mishpat, there's a difference. And they write the contract in such a way that he winds up getting paid only if the fruits are sold, which definitely makes the whole Otzah Beit Din system a little bit shakier when it comes to the validity of it, but there's usually no economic way to do it. Again, in this book, Rav Weitman, he wants to see a national Otzah Beit Din, perhaps even funded by the government or funded by something like Tznuva, and perhaps one day Medinat Yisrael will get to that point. But right now, the Otzah Beit Din is run by various organizations, and those organizations usually don't have the financial resources to be able to pay the farmers a salary regardless of whether they sell the fruits or not. And therefore, we have to rely on this, kind of a little bit more flimsier way to do it. But still, Otzah Beit Din is a fantastic way to get fruits that, first of all, don't rely on Hetzer Mechira. You're supporting farmers who actually do observe Shemitah and don't sell their fields to a goy. And you rely on a legitimate hetzer, and you have the discourse afterwards of eating peor shvit, the kedusha, with all the responsibilities and difficulties that it entails, but with all the privileges that it entails as well. Yes, Ilana.
The fruit festival here with our Beit Din, is there a fixed fee for all the fruits? They have some fruit that's more expensive.
In practice, that's a good point also, right? In theory, if all I'm paying for is for labor, right? So if grapes are a lot more expensive than, I don't know, apples, per kilo, but it could be more labor intensive. It could be, but in practice, it also might be that they're just worth more because of supply and demand, right? Right. So in theory, I should be paying for the question should be how much labor is involved, and not what's the market value of these foods. In practice, you wind up paying something that's close to the market value of the food. Right. So there's no question that the Otzer Beit Din, the way it's implemented, is certainly also relying on a bit of stretching and some leniencies in applying the principles. There's no question about that. But there's no way around that. The reality of Shemitah today is that, and I'm going to talk about this at the end of the shiur today, the reality of Shemitah today is that no matter what choice we choose, we have to rely on certain leniencies. There are no perfect options yet. I'll talk about that at the end. Okay. Yeah. That's correct. He has in this book a way to do it. If you're growing food specifically for export, there may be ways to do it. It's a complicated procedure. It sounds a little bit like a hetzer mechira, but it's not exactly. Basically, what you do is if I'm a farmer who's growing for export, not that I decided I can't sell it in Israel. If I grew up planning to sell it in Israel and all of a sudden I get a customer overseas, that I can't do. Okay, but if I have an export market. And we talked about this. A lot of the agriculture in Israel is designed for export, and they don't even have local markets for the quantities that they're producing. So there is a way, which is also questionable, but which is endorsed by some poskim, where basically the guy who's your real customer, not a fictitious sale of the hefter mechira, but the actual customer who's going to be buying the stuff, kind of buys it in advance, like a futures market. In other words, he buys next year's fruits from you. And that's also halachically problematic because there's a question of what's called the davar shelo bala olam. But they worked out a way in which, if I have this distributor or whatever is buying this from me, some guy in Europe, right, who's going to buy these things, I can get him to sign a contract with me in advance. He basically becomes the owner of the fruits before they grow. And then they grow, I'm growing them for him, and then they all doesn't have kedusha shvi'it. And you can export it. And it's not a hetzer mechira in the sense that he's not buying the land, he's buying, sometimes they sell the trees for the fruits. It's a complicated legal way to write it in halacha. It's also a hetzer. But that wouldn't be otzer beit din, right? Otzer beit din stuff should not be sent to chutzlah. It can happen. I have seen a bottle of wine that says otzer beit din on it in chutzlah. It's not supposed to happen, but I have seen such a thing. Okay. Once it's there, you probably should buy it so that it doesn't get used by the wrong person, and then you have to take care of it with kedusha shvi'it. Okay. So this works very nicely for food. This doesn't work for vegetables because after you plant it, what can we do with vegetables? First of all, there is an otzer beit din method that can be used for vegetables. At the very beginning of the Shemitah year. We talked about this. The problem with vegetables is they have to be planted, and even if a vegetable grows by itself during Shemitah, so there's the Isser Svichim. Now, vegetables, if you remember, have Kedusha Shvi'it determined by when they're picked, which means already the day after Rosh Hashanah, if you go out and pick a vegetable, unlike fruits, if you go out after Rosh Hashanah and pick a vegetable, it has Kedusha Shvi'it. But according to, it's Machloket Rishonim, but according to the Rash, Rambam disagrees, but according to the Rash, there's no Isser Svichin yet. Why? Because if you go out the day after Rosh Hashanah and pick a vegetable, that vegetable clearly wasn't planted in Shemitah. it takes more than a day to grow. So the Rash holds that the Isser Svichin for vegetables begins at the time that vegetable could have been planted during Shemitah. So if it takes 6 weeks for a given vegetable to grow, then that vegetable has no Isser Svichin for the first 6 weeks of Shemitah. If it takes 2 months, then for the first 2 months. So you can, therefore, and again, there's a machloket, but we rely on the lenient opinion, you can get otzer beit din vegetables at the very beginning of Shemitah. The first, depending on the thing, up until around Chanukah time for certain things, and some months of Cheshvan, depending on the nature of the various things and how long it takes to grow and how long the shelf life of it is, can probably sit in a warehouse for a few weeks more after that until it actually hits the shelf. For the first couple of months of Shemitah, you can get otzer beit din vegetables. And as a guy goes and plants now or in another few weeks, and then it grows, and then he harvests it at the beginning of Shemitah, it has Kedusha Tzviit, we hold it has no mitzvah tzvichin, and it can be marketed through Otzer Beit Din. But a few weeks into Shemitah, or certainly within a few months into Shemitah, that possibility dries up. There is, however, a fantastic method, which is also a kula, but it's based on a solid kula, that works for certain types of vegetables, and that's what's called matzah menutak. Now, we talked about this in matzah mem tzadi ayin, menutak, mem nun vav takkuf, from disconnected. If you might, you may recall, I think in our second shiur we talked about this. We talked about two separate arguments. The question is, if you plant inside a house, right, the Yerushalmi had a suffix, if you plant inside a house, what's the din?
That it's maybe.
Maybe, because it says on the one hand in the Torah, it says, Sadchalo Tizra, and your house is not on a dirt floor, right? If you plant on a dirt floor inside your living room, so on the one hand it says, Sadchalo Tizra, and your house is not a Sadeh. On the other hand, it says, V'shachta ha'aretz, and this is the aretz of the Yerushalmi with a suffix. The Pata Shulchan said we can be makil because Shemitah B'zmanah says Midrabanan, but the Chazonish said to be machmir. Okay, that was one machlokes. Second machlokes is if you grow in a flower pot, I mean, atzit she'eino nakuv, outdoors. So there was machlokes about that too. And again, we said to be machmir, but the Chazonish told us that if you combine both kulot, if it's a flower pot inside a house, so it's both in a house and in a flower pot, the Chazonish said for that you can be makil. Okay, so that's really the Chazonish. For Chazonish is a huge maker when it comes to Shemitah. Huge maker. The Chazonish is very lenient when it comes to Shemitah. People think he's a machmer. He didn't accept the Hetzer Mechira, but he has a huge number of leniencies. He's the one who endorsed the Otzer Beit Din, which we spoke about. And he endorsed this also in a number of other cases. I mentioned this to you. In many cases, the Chazonish is much more lenient than Rav Kook.
That's so funny.
People misunderstand that. Rav Kook, I'll get back to this in the end. Let me just run through a few months first. I see people getting tired, so I'm going to try to be misdirected a little bit. Basically, a method has been developed which works for growing certain types of vegetables. Basically, what they do is they grow them in greenhouses. They build a greenhouse, and there is an opinion that a greenhouse is different. It's not called bayit. The whole idea of bayit is it's not normal to grow in a bayit, and this basket is used for growing. But we're making on that too. They build greenhouses, and then instead of planting in the ground in the greenhouse, they spread on the floor of the greenhouse these huge plastic sheets, which are disconnect from the ground, and then they place on top of that these large flower pots, or these large devices that they fill it. I don't even think they use soil. I think it's like special stuff that's extra fertilized, and they plant, let's say, peppers in those flower pots during Shemitah. Based on the Chazonish, we now have the following: it is mutter to plant seeds during Shemitah. Actually, plant seeds lechatzila, because it's not in the ground; it's in a flower pot inside the house. You can grow, you can harvest, you can sell. No Otzer Beit Din. There's no Kedusha Tzviit. You don't have the exclusive to be in the Kedusha Tzviit, but it's not possible to have Kedusha Tzviit because it will be also from Tzmichim anyway. So you can get your Kedusha Tzviit peppers for the first few weeks, or whatever. And then we have this Matzah Menutak. If I buy from the Matzah Menutak, again, I don't have the privilege of eating Kedusha Tzviit vegetables, but I can't do that anyway. I do, however, support a Jewish farmer who's running his farm, and is keeping the laws of Shemitah. And I also have the benefit from eating stuff that is completely mutter during Shemitah without any question, or without much question. It's a kula, but like I said, it's a solid kula. It's not as flimsy even as the Otzer Beit Din. I mean, it's a solid kula. So one second. The thing about matzah menutak is it's expensive. It's more expensive to grow this way. I went to a lecture about a week ago there's an organization called Otzar Haaretz, which is it's actually an organization that used to be located in Gush Katif, in Kfar Darom actually, and unfortunately isn't there anymore, obviously, and is now in Ashkelon. And they, Gush Katif is one of the areas where the whole Matzah Menutak method was really, really pioneered. The Chazonish gave the Psak Halacha to make it work in an economically viable way, that took scientists and farmers and, you know, creativity and whatever. But they're now doing this. In fact, Otara Arts is the organization that put me in touch with the guy we're going to meet tomorrow. He's not doing Matzah Menutak because he's growing, he's growing, in this part of the country, it's more fruits that are being grown. But they have developed this method. They claim, I don't know exactly what this means, but to prepare per dunam of greenhouses, to prepare to run a Matzah Menutak costs 15,000 shekels per dunam. Sounds like a lot. I don't know what that means. They said it partially pays off because once you do this whole thing, you wind up growing more per dunam than you would otherwise, I guess, because it's a certain amount of land. Don't ask me how much, I have no idea. It sounds impressive when you say 15,000 shekels a dunam, I have no idea what that means. In practical terms, the guy said it's going to cost 1 to 2 shekels more per kilo for any given thing in the market price.
Does it
cost
more like that in shipping it in?
You know, I'm saying compared to the Hetzer Mechira. Someone's growing peppers with Hetzer Mechira, okay? And therefore, those the Hetzer Mechira basically costs nothing, right? So the farmer basically finds some, even if he hired a lawyer, but basically, you know, he signed a document and now he runs his farm the same way he does. So the Hetzer Mechira is nothing, and he's sold for the regular market value, right? So if you can buy them, Matzah Menutak, he says expect to pay 1 to 2 shekels more per kilo. If peppers are going for $4.99 a kilo, Matzah Menutak ones will be going for $5.99 or $6.50 or whatever.
It's right, I mean, by
the time demand. So let's say, like, majority of the people who care about Hetzer Mechira,
right, are people who care about the influence of finance.
Is
that what we're saying? Is there people who make it run?
Hetzer Mechira? No, the whole country's buying Hetzer Mechira. The Chiloniim are all buying Hetzer Mechira.
Right.
The Arabs are buying Hetzer Mechira. Yeah.
Well,
everyone who goes into the supermarket.
People who make it work through, like, the connect or whatever, people who want their, like, in terms of, like, to adapt, to joke and whatever, right? Who pushing
against this,
like, make happen whatever
are
the people who actually care about
Shemitah. No.
So could they use their power to, like, their influence to, like, direct it towards the...
So, for sure, the more people that care about this and buy products from farmers that observe Shemitah, then the more kedai it is economically for farmers to do it. But right now, it's still a small market share.
Let's say all the Charizim races are using it.
So I'll get to the Charizim in a second.
Cousin each or whatever, wouldn't they be also in their restaurant? Like, they're paying more anyway.
They are paying more.
So why wouldn't they want to push through with the Cousin each okay anyway?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I'm not sure I have a full answer, but I'll discuss it at the end. Let me just wrap up the answer. But basically, again, so if the Hetzer Mechira, which is basically the standard market price for the things, right, they said the Matzah Menutak is going to cost a little bit more. And that's what the cost is for the farmer. And what this organization is even doing is they ask people to join in advance, to sign up to commit, to pay. They're asking people, I joined. Right? So they ask you to pay 650 shekels, of which you get back 600 shekels over 12 months in coupons. Meaning, basically, you pay 50 shekels just
to join.
And then you get every month, you pay them 600, and you get every month for 12 months, you get a coupon worth 50 shekels to be spent in one of their stores. And basically, the idea of that is they want to be able to show the farmers, you know, this many people signed up, are basically, it's basically committing to buy the stuff, at least on some small level, so that the farmers can judge how much of a market there really is and to invest the money to prepare these greenhouses, you know, to sell the stuff and whatever.
Why is being done so close to
Shemitah? Well, the Matzah Menutak, they right now they're able to plant stuff regular and sell it through Otar Beit Din. So they're only going to start planting Matzah Menutak stuff in a few months still.
Ah.
Right? And plus they've been doing this for a couple months already. Sign up. Okay, there are a few other possibilities. Very quickly, Drom Arava. There is a discussion. We're going to, our last year next week, we'll discuss this in more detail, the exact question of where the borders of Eretz Israel are when it comes to Shemitah. And not necessarily do the borders of today's state of Israel correspond to the halakhic borders of Shemitah. And particularly the southern part of the country, the Arava area around Eilat, used to be true in Gush Katif also. Unfortunately, that's not there anymore, but also some of the places near Aza, in the southern part of the area there. Some of these places may very well be outside the borders of Shemitah, in which case you could farm there regularly. It's in Machloket, and therefore usually what's done is they do a Hetzer Mechira there anyway, kind of L'chumra, but halachically, relying on a hetzer mechira there is easier if it's a suffix whether the whole thing applies there in the first place. I know this is to be machmir that maybe the laws of Shemitah apply, so you do a hetzer mechira. The hetzer mechira is always one of the problems, but, you know, so that is also an option. It's a bunch of stuff that's grown in the Arava. There's also Gvilei Shishit. In other words, the stuff that's grown now, if it can be preserved, and different types of products, like different shelf lives, and today with refrigeration and stuff like that, you can get stuff from the sixth year, sometimes significantly into Shemitah, or for fruits, into the eighth year, which is going to Shemitah, it's relevant for fruits. There's also another method that I won't go into now because it's getting very late, but just to mention what's called Zriyah Mukdemet. There's a method where you can try to plant seeds now, but not grow them till later. For example, wheat. Wheat only grows in the winter when it starts to rain, unless you water it. But you wouldn't water it now because the weather conditions aren't right. So if you plow a wheat field now and you plant seeds, those seeds are just going to sit there for a couple of months. And when it starts to rain, then they'll start to grow. So what happens if you, normally you don't do that. Normally you plant like close to the, what if you plow and plant early and let it grow during Shemitah? So first of all, there's a huge halakhic question whether that's tzichin. These things grew during Shemitah, right? The seed took root and grew during Shemitah. That's a huge question. Number two, it's also a technological problem to make it work. The seeds could get ruined, they could get damaged, they could lots of problems. If it doesn't rain, and then the question is, if it doesn't rain, are you allowed to water it? If you're watering it, you're managed making it grow. Kitzur, the Chazonish actually has a way which he allowed it, which is a huge, huge kula, what the Chazonish said, but Shlomo Zalman Orbach didn't accept that kula, but he came from a different kula. There are, I don't know how much of this is being done l'maaseh, it's discussed in the Sfarim, I don't know how much of it's actually being done l'maaseh, but you should just know that this method is out there. It also relies on major kulas, but it's also a possibility. And then, of course, you can import from Kutzart or you can buy from Goyim. Those are basically your options. Now, what should you do? Before I tell you what I think, let's just analyze the problem. On one level, I understand the argument that's basically what's followed in the Haredi community to a large extent, which is just buy from Goyim. Or from Chutzlaret. You're being machmir. Kasher lemehadrin. There's no concern. If you buy from an Arab, so then you have machloki whether you should treat it with Kedusha Shviyat or not. So maybe you'll treat it with Kedusha Shviyat and be even more machmir. And if you buy from Chutzlaret, then even that you don't have. There's no question of Shamur v'ne'eva. There's no question of why you have to rely on all these coolers. No problem whatsoever. And also, if you don't have stuff with Kedusha Shviyat, then you don't have to worry about the problems that can take place with Kedusha Shviyat. You don't have to worry that maybe someone's going to destroy Kedusha Shviyat. You don't have to worry that it might somehow wind up being eaten by a guy. That you don't have to worry about all the various concerns that can happen. So on a certain level, from a certain perspective, it certainly makes sense that that's the best thing to do. Yes? Correct. So you're losing that mitzvah. So you're losing that mitzvah. So maybe once in a while you'll go out and get a hold of you'll go to your friend who has an apple tree and you'll be kind of mitzvah thing, or you'll maybe buy some oats or bake and stuff, but you know, most of the time, you know.
Oh,
sorry, can't introduce your food. You're not allowed to give it to a boy. Right. That could
get awkward.
It could not only get awkward, it could get problematic. It's another thing that White deals with in this book here. His method. See, this is one of the differences. The Otar Arts organization that I mentioned to you before, because of that, they're selling their products, they're distributing their Otar Beitin stuff in special stores. You can't walk into Alice or Supersol and buy Otar Beitin stuff, at least through Otar Arts. They're selling special stores, and that's true. What are they going to do if the Arab guy or whatever walks into his store? I don't know if they'll be able to sell to him, not sell to him, but he probably won't walk into the store. They're in religious neighborhoods, and some of them aren't even regular stores. They're like being run by private people in their houses or in the school. What? Yeah, for sure, in Givat Shaul, they're going to have no question. Rav Whiteman's method of what he wants to see in this book is that the whole country should be operating through Oter Beit Din, and that means that if sure. I mean, you got to understand that in the Divat Yisrael today, as many as there are 7 million people in Israel today. At least 1 million of them are Arabs, and close to another 1 million are Russian immigrants who may not be halakhically Jewish. Meaning, there's about, I think, 1.5 million Russian immigrants, something like that. No one knows exactly. Anywhere from 500,000 to 750,000 of them are not halakhically Jewish. Nobody really knows. Then you have all these foreign workers, you know, and stuff like that. So there are plenty of goyim that buy Peiros Shvi if they're being sold in stores, in regular supermarkets, right? Not to mention Jews who buy them and don't follow the laws of Kedushat Shvi with them, right? So he deals with that issue in his book, avoiding it. Again, you know, the question is where you're going to be lenient. That's the bottom of the thing. So that's really what I want to focus on. So again, I understand the theory that says buy from Arabs, buy from Kutzvah, keep Shemitah and Hajj. Except... Okay, true. Although the response to that would be, but everybody's avoiding Shemitah. What, Hetzer Mechira is not avoiding Shemitah? What's greater avoiding Shemitah than that? And Matam Lutak is also avoiding Shemitah. And
it's not like not thinking. It's very different.
So now you're getting to a different point. You're getting to what I do versus what everyone else does.
Right, we can't just say what I do,
doesn't matter. Yes, sir. Okay. I'm coming to that. One second. Even before I get to that. But I just want to point out that the buying, particularly from Arabs, is a significant issue here. First of all, it's pretty ironic if one of the main objections to Hetzer Mechira, we said, is Lo Techamim, right? I want to make sure, I'm concerned that by selling this land for a period of 2 years, you know, for this legal technicality to a guy, I'm violating Lo Techamim. But instead, if we go and buy from the Arab farmers and don't buy from the Jewish farmers, so what's happening? That's because the Arab farmers, and I've heard this from a number of people who've heard it from Arabs, they love Shemitah. Every 7 years, big business for them. And if I strengthen the Arab agricultural economy and weaken the Jewish agricultural economy, what winds up happening is those Jewish farmers are at risk of going out of business, and who's going to buy off their land? The Arabs, who just made a lot of money, right? So look at this. Because I'm trying to avoid Lo Techamim, maybe at a technical level I didn't violate it, but you don't want to give them chanayah, the karka, you're forcing the Jewish farmer out of business, and the Arab farmer is going to get the market share. So that's pretty backwards, right? Not to mention, and you know, I don't want to get political, but I think it cannot be ignored that right now, at least some of the Arabs that we're buying from are actively our enemies, particularly this year. It's not clear whether anybody is, right now that after Hamas took over, it's not clear whether Israel is going to be able to import anything from Gaza, where a lot of stuff is being grown, because they hate us so much that they're not willing to sell to us and we don't want to buy from them, whatever it is. But we may have to because we can't supply the Shemitah needs if we don't. But if you're buying from Gaza today, you are mamish paying money to buy Qassam rockets to be shot at steroids. Understand that. That's a reality that cannot be ignored, I think. Yes?
Do people sell their land to Israeli Arabs?
Yes. The Hetzer Mechira is done with Israeli citizens. But I'm talking about people who buy from Arab farmers, so some of those Arab farmers are Palestinians,
okay.
Not just Israeli citizens. In addition to all that, by the way, it's also a known fact, and I've also heard this from a number of people, that sometimes when you buy from an Arab, you're not exactly getting what you think you're getting. So you have Jewish farmers who, because of all the Shemitah restrictions, might have trouble selling their stuff. And the guy's not from. So what does he do? He makes a deal with his neighbor Muhammad, fills up his truck probably on Shabbos when the rabbis aren't around to check, drives over to Muhammad, right, sells that stuff to him, and Muhammad goes ahead and sells the stuff and takes a cut, right? And so you're thinking you're keeping Shemitah and Mahadrin, buying stuff with a Badat Ashkacha because it says, Yivul Nachli, it might have been from a Jew all along. This definitely happens. It's a known fact. The Kashrus organizations say that they try to you know, check into it, and they can to some extent, but it's very difficult.
It's very true.
Well, you can check certain things. You can check the quantities that are being sold. The Arabs sold this much stuff. You see what the steel produces. You might be able to catch somebody sometimes, but you really can't be mefakeh on this completely, and therefore, even if all you care about is the narrow issue of the laws of Shemitah, you might get nailed on that anyway. Beyond all this is a fundamental issue, and this touches on what Yael was already mentioned before. You see here, the more you think about this, and I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been, you know, preparing this year, and the more you think about this, the more you realize that Shemitah is a national mitzvah. Shemitah is not a mitzvah that is kept by individuals. Hayta Shabbat ha'etzlachem li'ochla lecha ola'avdecha lamatecha l'gircha l'tashavcha agarim imach. Right? Tashvi tishmetenu l'tashta v'yachlu ev yonei amecha. And you see how this works here. The whole approach that's being taken by the Haredi community only works because it's a limited community that's doing it. Meaning, if all of the, let's say everybody in Israel got from, and all decided that we're going to do, right? And all decided that we're going to do this, that we're going to follow this shita. We're all going to buy only from Arabs and from imports. So first of all, the whole Navi Israeli economy, agricultural economy, completely collapses. Number two, there's nowhere near enough stuff. The Arabs don't grow enough stuff to feed the whole country. Baruch Hashem, there still are a lot of Jewish farms, and they can't, there's a limit to how much they can produce. And there's a limit to how much you can import without spending, you know, absurd amounts of money. And even then. So, basically, the whole thing works only because the Chilonim and the religious Zionists are buying Hetzer Mechira stuff or some of these other options, right? Which also means you got to think through the following. In other words, if my starting point is I don't think the Hetzer Mechira should exist. So if I'm not willing at least to buy Otzer Betin or Matzah Menutak or something like that, then I'm basically forcing the farmers to do Hetzer Mechira. Not all the farmers that do Hetzer Mechira are Chilonim. There are a significant number of religious farmers. And some of them really do want to keep Shemitah. And we're going to meet a guy tomorrow. I'm not sure exactly what he's going to tell us. Like I mentioned to you, I spoke to him briefly on the phone, and he mentioned to me, I said to him, if you don't, I want to make sure I'm taking you to meet the guy who keeps Shemitah. So I said to him, I just want to make sure we're not going to a guy who just says, oh yeah, very simple, you know how I keep Shemitah? The rabbi shows me this paper, I sign it, and I'm finished, and here's my farm. So then what's the point of going to? So I said, you don't rely on that from a Mechira, right? He said, Ani Mishtadel Shalom. I try not to. But he said he has one particular field, vineyard, that he's not sure what he's going to do, and he may need to rely on Hetzer Mechira, and we'll discuss with you tomorrow, I hope, what exactly his particular reasons are, and why he's not sure, and I want you to hear this his leptuk that he has, right? But I'm saying, put yourself, let's say you're a farmer who wants to keep Shemitah, and there are those who do. If you don't have a market for your stuff, right? If you're going to do the Otzer Betin, there's a financial risk in that. If you're going to do the Matzah Menutak, that you have to invest serious money and all this kind of stuff. And you, Sach HaKol, you need to keep your business going and you need to support your family, right? So if there's a market of people that are willing to pay what it costs and to buy your stuff, buy it, pay you as a contractor to bring the Hefker stuff to market, whatever you want to call it, but if he has a legitimate way of making his keep making a living and keeping his business going, then perhaps he'll keep Shemitah. If the starting point would be that all the people that are religious just buy Arab stuff, then his only option to sell his stuff is through Hetzer Mechira. Right? Because if you're not going to at least buy the Otzer Betin and the other things, then he has no choice but to do Hetzer Mechira. So it's kind of ironic that the tzibur that So a lot of this boils down to, and this is, I think, what Yael was touching on before, this becomes a very serious hashkafic issue. When I think of Shemirat HaMitzvot, do I think only of my own personal Shemirat HaMitzvot? Or do I consider myself in the context of the klal? And here's a very real case where I may need to ask myself whether I should be relying on certain kulot myself in order to help somebody else keep a mitzvah or not. And there's no clear answer to that, but my opinion certainly is to try to try to support Jewish farmers as much as possible. I also try not to rely on Het Mechira because I do think it's difficult and problematic. And therefore, just to say very briefly, Rav Rimon, who I've quoted a number of times, and who's my Rav, and who's exactly intent to follow, suggested the following policies, which I basically agree with, both because he's my Rav and because it also makes sense to me. And what I intend, two different things.
No,
Yacholios. I don't know which is the chicken, which is the egg, when it comes to fruits, I intend to try first and foremost to buy Rotzo Beit Din as much as possible. If that's not available, other things like Perot Shishit or, you know, if necessary, Aravad Yomit. And if it comes down to, which with fruits it may not happen, I think last week I don't remember being faced with this choice, but if it comes down to my only options are Hetter Mechira or Arab or import, at least for things that I normally buy, Jewish grown stuff. So for fruits I would buy Hetter Mechira stuff at that point. Yeah?
Question, like practically speaking, like let's say you're in Israel or Brenda that year and you go into a random store.
Let me ask you in one minute, okay? When it comes to vegetables, again, at the beginning of the year, there'll be also baked in vegetables, and I'll try to buy those. After that, matzah menutak. What I didn't mention is matzah menutak. Matzah menutak is a great method, but you can only grow certain things that way. Things that, for example, have to grow deep in the ground. I think so. On the one hand, I think halakhically, it's even on more solid ground halakhically. You don't have the value of Kedusha Shvi'it, but, you know, you're supporting Jewish farmers and all that. The problem is you can't grow everything that way. For example, things that have to grow deep in the ground, like potatoes and carrots, you can't grow that way. This doesn't exist, or at least the methods haven't been invented. So there are no matzah menutak potatoes. So you don't have that option. So when it comes to potatoes and things like that, Otzer Beit Din, Shishit, again, there's a remarketing 6-year stuff. People have been growing extra potatoes now and trying to, you know, schlep them along a little longer into the market. And again, with modern methods you can keep things going a little bit longer these days. If that's not an option, Arava Dromit.
What was that again?
The Arava. And then, what?
Before.
I'm going to do right. The buying from local Arabs. This is neither a racist remark nor even a political remark. It's a Zionist remark. Meaning, I'm not boycotting. No, I'm trying to explain. I'm going to explain what I mean. I'm not boycotting Arabs. I'm supporting Jews. Seriously. I'm trying to support the local Jewish economy and the struggle to settle Eretz Israel. It's that simple. If there's no other choice, and my only two options become, let's say for a potato, Hetzer Mechira or import, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what to do. Because then already the Hetzer Mechira, if it's a regular ordinary Hetzer Mechira, you get a real silo of Sfichim. On the other hand, I'd rather support it. Now, if I buy an import of, let's say, I don't mean import it from Gaza. I'm talking about imported from Europe. So on the one hand, I'm not supporting the Arab. I'm also not supporting the Jew, though. So at that point, I'm really, really not sure what to do. But again, the Hetzer Mechira, again, even more this nowadays than perhaps in a generation or two ago, and even maybe the Shemitah even a little better because the Rabbanut, like I said, is taking the Shtarot a little more seriously. So I certainly would have no problem with someone buying Hetzer Mechira under those conditions. Now, in terms of Hashgacha and how you know, so in many cases during Shemitah, particularly in religious areas, you'll actually see the stuff labeled. It'll actually say in the store, it'll say Perot Nachri, it'll say Yivul Shishit, it'll say Otzer Beit Din will for sure be labeled very clearly as Otzer Beit Din. It'll say Matan Menutak, a lot of times it'll say. You also have to know what the various things, you know, what the various, you know, someone with a regular Rabbanut Hashgacha without any other clarifying thing is very possibly Hetzer Mechira. Unless it says otherwise. Something with a Bedat Hashgacha is certainly not Hetzer Mechira and is most likely Perot Nachri or imports. Again, it also depends on the time of year. Certain things will get Perot Shishit and, you know, For sure, but again, you should be a sophisticated consumer, and you should know what to ask. And a lot of times, like I said, a lot of times it'll be labeled and clear. If you go to the Otsar Haaretz stores, so then, first of all, you'll know it's not Hetzer Mechira, and it's not Arabs, and it'll be labeled exactly what method was used.
But Hetzer Mechira, like on one hand you're saying, well, now it's a little more legitimate, but you're trying to
write it. Again, I'd rather buy Otsar Beitin or Matzah Menutak than Hetzer Mechira, but the Hetzer Mechira is still better off than it used to be.
Like, for instance, let's say you're with your family, and you don't really know that it's, like, whatever, that you're looking for any like,
definitely yes, Amal Smoch. There was always Amal Smoch. Again, the Hetzer Mechira, I repeat, the Hetzer Mechira was endorsed by Gedolei Yisrael of the highest caliber. The Gedolei Hador of Yisrael Chachan Inspector was the Gadol Hador at the time. And Rav Kook, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach admitted that it works also, and even the Chazon Ish was mitlabet about it, you know. So there's no question that the Hetzer Mechira, you know, is definitely a legitimate halakhic opinion. There's no question about that. But again, even those who allowed it made it very clear that the goal should be to outgrow the need for it, right? And so therefore, even if it works completely, I'd still rather, if I buy Otsar Beitin or Matzah Menutak, I am supporting a farmer who's keeping Shemitah and not relying on Hetzer Mechira. So even if Hetzer Mechira is completely legitimate, I want to encourage that. I'm willing to pay a little bit more money for it also. Yeah.
First of all,
you're not allowed to sell paper sheets for profit. Second of all, Beit Din is not a business; it's a non-profit organization. It's basically a government or a private, you know. So no, there's not any profits that are supposed to be made. Basically, what happens is that money is, you know, there may be administrative costs that they have to pay the people who sit in their office, and even the dayanim get paid, you know, to supervise and mashkichim and all of that. But those are not profits, those are just costs of running the Beit Din, and then the money is supposed to be handed over to the farmers as a salary for their efforts. Well, they can, the problem is only if they sell the fruits. So it winds up being, you know, in theory, this is what we spoke about before, yeah, Ellie, you want to say something? Then I have one more comment.
Are there people who would just like, say, okay, we're just not going to have potatoes here? Yeah.
There are people who do that. That's a significant fact. I mean, I want you to think about what that means. Not having a potato for at least 6 months. Right? And such a potato. Such a potato. And plenty of other things also. Like carrots and, you know. Look. I want to just close by pointing out the following thing. Ideally, we're supposed to be relying on Hashem, the Torah tells us, and Hashem will provide for us. We talked about whether that's true when Shemitah Zerban, is not true when Shemitah Zerban, and stuff like that. Barur, that whatever is being done in Shemitah nowadays is relying on all sorts of leniencies. There's a beautiful article that I mentioned to you, and I meant to photocopy and give out to you now. I forgot to photocopy and bring it up here. But I'll give it to you, Bezrat Hashem, in school next week. Mori Varebi, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, 35 years ago, after, in 1973, after experiencing his first Shemitah here, after he made Aliyah, he wrote a short article called Hurei Shemitah, in which he basically laments the fact, he doesn't take a position in that article, I mean, I know what his position is, but in that article he doesn't take a position of whether we should have the Hetzer Mechira or shouldn't have the Hetzer Mechira. He says, either way, the vision that the Torah set out of what Shemitah is supposed to be, and everybody works together, and everybody's equal, and everybody helps each other out, and everybody just, you know, eats the holy fruit that grew in the land, whether we're you know, relying on the Hetzer Mechira, whether we're buying from Arabs, whether we're doing all sorts of other patentim, and you know, relying on these very, in some cases, somewhat flimsy, you know, heterim, His line was, if you're Hebrew, is a little bit good enough to pick up the nuance, Anachnu lo shomtim, Anachnu mishtamtim. We're not releasing the land, we're escaping, you know, from the mitzvah. And I spoke, he made a comment in the article, and I spoke to him a few months ago, and I asked him about this question. And he basically repeated the same comment. He told me, the Torah, in only two places in the whole Torah, but the Torah says, keep this mitzvah, and Hashem will, trust in Hashem, and Hashem will take care of you. One is Shemitah Karka, and the other is Shemitah Ksafim. And we failed both tests. Shemitah Ksafim already 2,000 years ago, they had to come up with the Prusbol, because people weren't doing it. Shemitah Karka, you know, as we said before, and as Yael said again, it's clear, and we talked about this, they even tried it, with Yeshua Leib Diskin and Shmuel Salant, they tried just saying, no, just keep Shemitah, and it's clear the farmers are just going to, if we don't let them do the Hetzim Mechira, they're just going to, no one's going to stand in the Nisayon. And the comment was just made before, those of us who cloak ourselves in the cloak of righteousness, and, you know, say how firm we are, we're not going to go without fruits and vegetables for a year either. These very, very few of us are. It's very easy to say, okay, I'm going to go buy from the Arab, and I'm from, and you're not. But you know.
You sure you'll be able to eat bread if
you're given. Right. The only reason we can eat bread is because we import the wheat. Right? If we were relying on locally grown wheat, we wouldn't even be able to eat bread. Right? Yeah. Happens to be that economically it's not worth it for us to eat our own wheat, so we import the wheat, so you don't have to worry about bread. But anyway, so those are the issues, those are the dilemmas, and I'll give you next week a look and see the article, so you can read, you know, his closing point in the article is, I'm not saying we shouldn't do all this stuff, we have to do this stuff, whether it's Dan's Mechira or something else, and we have to do it, but let's not lose sight of the fact that this is, let's cry about it a little bit, and let's not lose sight of the vision of what's supposed to be, and hope to get to the day that we keep Shemitah. Yeah, it's supposed to be kept.